ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
तयोस्ताद् अद्भुतं कर्म दवाग्निर्मोक्षमात्मनः गोपास्त्रीभ्यः समात्सक्यु प्रलम्बपदमेव च. Shukadev Goswami said, to the ladies of Vrindavan, the cowherd boys then related in full detail Krishna's and Balaram's wonderful activities of delivering them from the forest fire and killing the demon Pralamba. Gopa vridhascha gopyascha thar upakaranya vismrita menare deva pravaro krishna ramo vrajangato. The elder cowherd men and ladies were amazed to hear this account, and they concluded that Krishna and Balaram must be exalted demigods who had appeared in Vrindavan. Tata pravartata pavrit sarvasattva samudbhava vidyotamana paridhir vishporajita napastala. Then the rainy season began, giving life and sustenance to all living beings. The sky began to rumble with thunder, and lightning flashed on the horizon. Sandra nilambudaya vyoma sadvidyut stanavitnabi aspasta jyoti achanam brahmeva sagunam babho. The sky was then covered with dense blue clouds, accompanied by lightning and thunder. Thus the sky and its natural illumination were covered in the same way that the spirit soul is covered by the three modes of material nature. Purport. Lightning is compared to the mode of goodness, thunder to the mode of passion, and clouds to the mode of ignorance. Thus the cloudly sky at the onset of the rainy season is analogous to the pure spirit soul when he becomes disturbed by the modes of nature. For at that time he is covered, and his original brilliant nature is only dimly reflected through the haze of the material qualities. Astoma san nipitam yad bhumyas chodamayam vasu swagobhir moktam arebhe parajanya kala agate. With its rays, the sun had for 8 months drunk up the earth's wealth in the form of water. Now that the proper time had arrived, the sun began releasing this accumulated wealth. Purport. The acharyas compare the sun's evaporating the earth's wealth of water to a king collecting taxes. In volume 1, chapter 20 of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Srila Prabhupada explains this analogy as follows. Clouds are accumulated water drawn from the land by the sunshine. Continually for 8 months the sun evaporates all kinds of water from the surface of the globe, and this water is accumulated in the shape of clouds, which are distributed as water when there is need. Similarly, a government exacts various taxes from the citizens, which the citizens are able to pay by their different material activities, agriculture, trade, and industry. Thus, the government can also extract taxes in the form of income tax and sales tax. This is compared to the sun drawing water from the earth. When there is again need of water on the surface of the globe, the same sunshine converts the water into clouds and distributes it all over the globe. Similarly, the taxes collected by the government must be distributed to the people as educational work, public work, sanitation work, and so on. This is essential for a good government. The government should not simply exact taxes for useless squandering. The tax collection should be utilized for the public welfare of the state. Srila Shukadev Goswami here explains after Krishna returned home in the evening from that wonderful day when he killed the great demon Pralamba and he swallowed that all-consuming forest fire. Every day the gopis in Nandagaon and all of the Brijvasis, they were simply waiting for news. What did Krishna do today? When someone we love is in an interesting condition of life, all those who love are always very anxious for news. In Vrindavan, Krishna would be herding cows with his friends throughout the day. And all of those gopis and elderly gopas who remained at home doing their duties, churning the butter, cooking, cleaning, and doing so many other wonderful activities in the service of Sri Krishna. They would all throughout the day just be remembering the beauty and the charm of Lord Sri Krishna. They could not stop thinking of him even for a moment. And whatever activities he performed on previous days, they would simply sing and chant the glories of those wonderful pastimes. But at the same time, they were always thinking, what is Krishna doing now? What news will the gopas come back with today? What wonderful, exciting leela will they explain to us this evening? So actually every evening it was like Srimad Bhagavatam class. Everyone would just gather around the gopas in their own little homes. Each gopa would go to his respectful home and everyone in the household would just come together. What did Krishna do today? What did Balaram do today? And they would begin to narrate. Krishna today, he was playing with us. And this big, big demon, he disguised himself as Cowherd Boy. This just happened this morning. And he took Balaram away. And Balaram smashed him with his fist. But first he grew into a massive form that covered the sky like a big, gigantic black mountain with red, fiery hair and eyes like charcoal. And then he fell to the ground. And then all the demigods started beating kettle drums and throwing flowers. And then our cows, they started walking away as we were herding them. We were playing so many nice games. These are the games we were playing. But when we went to find the cows, after Krishna called them all, they all came. A big, big fire came. Such a big fire, flames going to the sky, appearing to consume us at any moment. We were in helpless condition. And we turned to Krishna, and all the cows, with tears in their eyes, we all said, Krishna, please save us. And Krishna told us to close our eyes. And then we closed our eyes, and we do not know what happened, but when we opened our eyes, everything was very nice, no fire. And gopis, hearing this, they would just be in ecstasy of love. And then throughout the night, they would just be thinking of Krishna, how he has done like this. So actually, although the gopas, they personally witnessed these pastimes, through sound vibration, by hearing from them, all the Brijabasis were experiencing these pastimes. This is the nature of transcendental sound. The gopis, when they would hear the narration of Krishna's leela during the day, they experienced these wonderful pastimes in the same way as the gopas. And the great acharyas tell us similarly. Shukadev Goswami has narrated all these wonderful pastimes for us. And we can actually experience and enter into this wonderful pastime simply by hearing with submissive reception to the words of the Srimad Bhagavatam. In this way, day and night, the Vrijabasis were immersed in the ever-new, ever-fresh, ever-adventurous lila of Sri Balaram and Krishna. It is described by Srila Sukadeva Goswami, then the rainy season began. And here he is describing Braj Bhumi. You see, Vrindavan is none different than Krishna. It is described that Sri Krishna expands as Balaramji, his first original expansion, and Balaramji himself expands himself as the Dham of Vrindavan. Braj Bhumi is none other than Balaram's personal body, Krishna's personal body. And therefore, Vrindavan is as sacred and worshipable as the Lord of Vrindavan, Vrindavanath Sri Krishna. There is no difference, absolutely no difference. Therefore, just as when we come before the Murti of Lord Sri Krishna, learned and sincere Vaishnavas, when they go to Vrindavan, they worship Vrindavan just like they worship a Murti. They fall down in the dust of Vrindavan when they first come. This is a regulative principle. When entering into Vrindavan, we should first fall down in the dust and offer our prayers and love to the Holy Dham. Because this Holy Dham is providing all wonderful, wonderful arrangements for Lord Sri Krishna's lila. And just as Shukadeva Goswami explains the various bodily features of Sri Krishna at different times, sometimes when he's a child, he's covered with dirt. Sometimes he's bedecked with peacock feather. Sometimes he's playing the flute. Sometimes he's herding cows. Sometimes he's wearing the yellow dhoti and the Vijayant mala. And in this way, Mother Yashoda would decorate Krishna in different varieties of ways every day. Basically, same format. Always putting his peacock feather, flute, certain things Krishna was very much liking to always have. But other details, she would just, to her heart's content, decorate Krishna with nice jewelries and nice cloths. And Krishna would be very happy to receive her love. So devotees love to discuss the beautiful form of Krishna, how he is decorating, how he is appearing before our eyes. But here Shukadeva Goswami is explaining that Vrindavan, who is also the divine murti of Sri Krishna, how Vrindavan Dham is decorated in different ways in different seasons. And one of the most beautiful decorative shringars of Braj Bhumi is the month of Shravan, that is the rainy season, when there is beautiful, beautiful clouds forming in the sky. It is described here that actually, absence makes the heart grow fonder. During the summer season, we have just read how the summer season in Vrindavan, although it was summer and all the heat and everything was there, every part of Braj Bhumi was simply giving their services to refresh Krishna. The sun was very hot. But why was the sun hot in Vrindavan? Not to cause pain like the sun is hot to us today here in India, especially in Uttar Pradesh. But the sun over Vrindavan was only beating just to give more service to all the other Vrijabasis. The waterfalls would just start making their water go everywhere so that little sprinklets would go on Krishna Balaram and all the Vrijabasis. And the breeze would start coming more and more, and the river Jamuna would start splashing beautiful, cool, refreshing waters on everyone, and lotus flowers were just growing everywhere to give a cooling effect. In this way, none of the Vrijabasis experienced any of the heat of the summer. Everyone was so busy surrendering their every aspect of their life to make Krishna comfortable. So this is the opulence of the summer season. This has been described. The Shringar of Braj Bhumi during the hot months, And here is Shringar of Brajbhumi during the monsoon rainy season. It is described that the earth is just being beaten down by the sun, and the residents also during summer. And people are longing for these beautiful rain clouds to come, to give shade, and to give water, and to give refreshment. In fact, these beautiful rain clouds, they are the color which is called sham. They are beautiful, blackish clouds. And they happen to be the same color as Krishna. Sometimes we say Krishna is the color of a newly formed monsoon rain cloud. But sarva karana karanam, Krishna is the cause of all causes. Actually, the newly formed monsoon rain clouds are the color of Krishna. And why do they take the color of Krishna? Because they want to give a very good message to the world. Then in this material existence, we are all being scorched by the heat of the sun of material nature. And we're just being dried up. The threefold miseries of material existence, the burning fire, samsara dava nala lita loka. This material existence is like a burning fire, like the burning fire of the sun, like the burning fire of a forest fire. This is burning our hearts. Who would not say that their hearts are not burning due to the anxieties of material life? From time to time, whatever arrangements we make, ultimately all of our good fortune and all of our noble attempts to be happy in this world are ultimately consumed by this burning, blazing fire. And all of our success and all of our credible accomplishments, they are all ultimately evaporated by the sun of material existence. So therefore, it's a very difficult situation. And people are suffering. And a wise man knows he's suffering. And a fool, in his folly of ignorance, thinks, I am happy, or if I'm not, I will become. By making one more adjustment, and then another, and then another, another, another. Never ends the vicious cycle of trying to make adjustments for relief and happiness in this world. But whatever we do is evaporated by that sun of material existence, that fire. So after a long, long stretch of being burnt by the sun and the forest fire of material existence, when those beautiful blackish rain clouds come, we feel great hope. We feel refuge, shelter. The blackness in the rain clouds, the blackness is the presence of rain. And what is the rain that Krishna possesses? His mercy. The blacker the cloud, the more rain is in the cloud. And for us, that rain is the life-giving, nourishing mercy that relieves us from the pangs of the heat. The white spring clouds have no rain in it. So therefore, when these rain clouds come, the devotees are simply in the summer, they're just waiting for those clouds, they're just praying for those clouds. What to speak of the farmers with their agricultural fields? Everything's drying up. They're just praying for these black, black rain clouds to come. And when they finally appear, there is a great, great celebration. And in that celebration, these beautiful bluish rain clouds start pouring down torrents of rain. They give shade from the heat of the sun, and they give utter nourishment to all living beings. Therefore, Krishna's Shyam Sundar. The beautiful blackish monsoon rain cloud complexion of Sri Krishna. A devotee who is suffering in his material existence is simply praying, when will that beautiful Shyam Sundar come into my life and relieve me from the pains and sufferings of this existence? And when Krishna comes,
the rains of his mercy fill our lives. And then all wonderful fortune and opulence from within and without are bestowed upon us by his divine mercy. It is described here that many analogies are to be understood by this beautiful description of the Shravan Shringar of Sri Brajbhumi Dham. It is described here that just like lightning is compared to the mode of goodness, because light, thunder, the mode of passion, and clouds, the mode of ignorance. You see, the acharyas, from different points of view, they explain the same thing. And that this pure spirit soul, which is like the sun, in this analogy, is covered by all of these things. Actually, here, it describes by Srila Prabhupada that the sun's rays for 8 months they drink up all the earth's wealth. It is described here that the earth's wealth is in the form of water because nothing can survive without water. Nothing can live without water. A desert is a place where to the degree there is no water, there is no life. There is no vegetation. There is no insects even. Nothing can survive without water. Therefore, the real wealth of this earth is actually water. Without water, there's no food. Srila Prabhupada used to tell us, what is wealth? Wealth, you cannot eat nuts and bolts. We may have our big, big factories and our big, big refineries and everything else. You cannot drink oil. And you cannot eat ambassador motor cars. Huh? We need food. Food is the basic subsistence of life. It is the greatest necessity, and it is actually the greatest fortune. To have plentiful food, materially, is the greatest fortune in the world. Even if you don't have a home, you could live. Here in Bombay, people live very comfortably without homes. They sleep on streets, and they don't mind. They're quite happy. They have nice... they have a luxurious situation. The richest people, they have a big, big house, and they paint on the ceiling something that looks like the sky. Huh? They hire some very costly artist to paint clouds and paint the sky on their ceiling. And people say, oh, it looks like the sky. Very nice. Now you can sleep under this beautiful darshan of the sky. But actually, these people on the streets, they're sleeping and they look up and they have the whole sky. Huh? It's opulence. See the positive side of everything. Huh? So in this way, really, whatever our living conditions and everything else, if we have nice food to nourish us, we have real fortune in the material sense. But it is explained by Krishna in Gita, Anad bhavanti bhutani parajanyan anasambhava jagya bhavati parajanyo jagya karamashamudbhavaha. That means that all living beings subsist on food grains. That is the essential necessity of life. That is fortune. And food grains are born of rain. No rain, no food. No rain, no fortune. You can extract billions of tons of oil from the earth. But if there's no rain, there's no food, what will all your oil do? Everyone will die. Huh? It is a fact.
Oil grows in the deserts where there is no rain, mostly.
Huh?
But our society today is more concerned with that, more concerned with the wealth of the deserts, more than the wealth of the prosperous lands that are full of water and rains.
Huh?
What does this mean? This means that our whole society is based on an artificial premise, completely off track. Simple living, high thinking. So factually, water is wealth. You see, even when we go to Pune for this yatra, we go to Pune and we all have nice rooms and nice beds and everything else, but we're all just trying to get into the bathroom, standing in line. Because everyone knows that, you know, you can have all everything, but if you don't have water, you suffer.
It is fact. Water is wealth. Water is the source of all wealth
on the material plane. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said the holy name is compared to water. Hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord is the water that nourishes the dried up heart and allows the seed of love to grow.
It is a fact.
Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami explains that my tongue is like a desert. And my heart is like a desert. It's all dried up. It's all withered away by the heat of material existence. But the holy name, which is non-different than Krishna, which is the mercy of Krishna, the holy name is descending from that blackish cloud of Shamsundar into this world. Shamsundar is the cloud and his name is like those rains, which are non-different from him. You cannot say the rain is different than the cloud. And when we taste the holy name with our tongue, this dried up desert-like tongue becomes full of life. And when that name enters into our ears, Rupa Goswami says, it gives so much refreshment, so much nourishment, so much relief, we desire millions and millions of ears. And when the rain of Krishna's mercy and the sweet sound of the nectary name comes into our heart, it just gives complete bliss and satisfaction. Our senses, our mind becomes inert by tasting the sweetness of Harinam. So it is described here that a government is actually supposed to be the representative of God. Traditionally, the king was God's representative for managing the state. And therefore, the king was supposed to deal with the state the same way God deals with his creation. Just as the sun extracts the water, makes it into clouds, which is like the storage of that water, and then goes to those places which are most need of water and just flourishes everything with wonderful rains. Similarly, the government excises taxes from everyone. But the purpose of the excising of taxes is just to store that money so that that wealth can go to the places where it is most needed and then profusely distributed for everyone's welfare. But today, somehow or other, the money is being extracted, but we just don't see any clouds in the sky. And we don't see any water coming back down. We don't know where the money's going. Huh? Because the government is not only any government, it's very difficult to find a government where there is saintly people who are actually ruling the state according to God's will. You see, Krishna, by his divine arrangement, he arranges the sun to just take the proper water at the proper time and then distribute it nicely. You never hear of the sun taking bribes. Huh? From the taxing, everything will be provided for everyone automatically. It should be understood. There should be that complete faith. But nowadays we know that nothing's going to be provided for me unless I bribe. Huh? I have to give more on the side. What does this mean? This means that the leaders are not God conscious. They are not ruling on behalf of God. They are ruling on behalf of their own pride, their own ego, and their own exploitative tendencies. And some are actually very pious. Some leaders actually really want to do good for the people. Such a soul is very rare, but they do. But because they are not being directed by the sadhus and the shastras and the gurus to teach them the actual method by which God is created, and you have to be in harmony with the way God is doing things. Therefore, although they have many good motives, they cannot accomplish or fulfill their desires to really help the state. But here it is described how wonderful it is for the whole society if there is a good government which is in harmony with the arrangements of Krishna. That there is no question of poverty. There is no question of lack of anything. The good government promotes sacrifice. In fact, we see great kings. They perform Rajasuya sacrifice, Ashwamedha sacrifice, Gomedha sacrifice. Ambarish Maharaj performed 1 year Ekadasi Vrat. Huh? Why do they perform these sacrifices? Not for themselves, for their citizens. They're willing to undergo all kinds of very, very great austerities and difficulties for the sake of their citizens, because they know that by performing sacrifice we please Krishna. Jagyaratat kamanon yatra lokumam karma mandana. By performance of sacrifice, we please Krishna. And we please all of his representatives, the demigods. And through performance of sacrifice, all of the requirements of our society, materially and spiritually, will be provided in abundance. Therefore, such kings knew that this is the first and foremost of all my responsibility. It's me as the leader. I must perform great sacrifices so that all of my citizens, all living beings in this kingdom, will get the ultimate benefits of life. Yad yad acharati sreshtas tad tad evetano jana sayat pramanam kurute lokas tadanu bharatate. What a great person does, the common man will naturally follow. When the king is living a holy and spiritual life, naturally, all the citizens will follow. It is explained that anyone who takes the responsibility of leader of any land, 1/5 of all the bad karma everyone goes to him. And 1/5 of all the good karma that the whole state performs goes to him. If you have hundreds of millions of people living in the country, and they are slaughtering cows, and they are drinking alcohol, and they are having illicit sex, and they're gambling, can you imagine how much 1/5 of all that accumulated karma has to go upon the head of the leader? Huh? If people knew this, they wouldn't be spending so much money trying to somehow or other get that position. They would be hiding and running from that position. But at the same time, 1/5 of the good karma also is shared. In a pious state, it's a good fortune to be king or leader. So therefore, this is the first responsibility, according to the Shastra. If we want real abundance, if we want real prosperity for our citizens and for our fellow man and all creatures of life, in fact, there must be sacrifice. There must be a pious life of sacrifice. We must live in harmony with the arrangement of God, which is explained so nicely here. In fact, Yudhisthira Maharaj, he called all of his citizens his praja. Praja means all those living beings who are depending on me. He didn't even see a discrimination between human beings or cows or birds. As far as Yudhisthira Maharaj is concerned, every living entity that has life in my kingdom, even the trees, even the plants, it was his responsibility to protect their rights. It is his responsibility to protect them with his mighty sword and all of his armies from anybody exploiting them or causing them unnecessary violence. And because of such a noble and pious, such a virtuous outlook of life, what was the kingdom of Yudhisthira? What was the kingdom of Ambarish Maharaj? There was nothing but prosperity for all. And we say, not today. Impossible. It's only impossible to the degree that there is no sacrifice. It is only impossible to the degree that we are not being taught by our leaders how to live in harmony with the laws of God. Just like this Marquis Jetland from Great Britain, when Srila Prabhupada's godbrother said, you want to be Brahmin? You follow these four regulative principles? No illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no meat eating. He said, impossible. Because we are so conditioned to so many bad habits, we think it is impossible, but actually it's not impossible. We just have to make that decision and have good association to guide us. So similarly, we may say that prosperity and peace in this world of chaos, it's impossible. It's impossible as long as we are habituated and conditioned to our materialistic ways of thinking. But if we simply learn how to perform sacrifice properly and live pious in those sacrifices, the fact is this world will become like a heavenly planet. Of course, in this age, the Gomeda sacrifice, no one can do. Not even the greatest kings. The Ashwamedha sacrifice, no one can do. The Rajasuya sacrifice that Maharaj Yudhisthira performed for the benefit of his state, no one can do it now. The world is in too fallen of a condition. Therefore, all of the acharyas and all of the scriptures explain there is only one sacrifice left in this age. But this sacrifice is more powerful than all the others put together. That is the chanting of God's holy name. Jagyai sankirtana prayaya janti hi shumedasha. Those who have good intelligence in the age of Kali perform the yajna of chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare. And it is described in the Shastra that simply by chanting the holy name once, sincerely, without an offensive mentality, one gets the results of performing all the thousands of Ashwamedha, Rajasuya, and Gomeda sacrifices. This is the power of the holy name. What is the problem in this world? The problem is simply one thing. People do not have faith in God's name. People are not willing to perform the sacrifice due to lack of faith. Harinama, 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 eva kevalam kalo nasteva, 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 gatiranyata. Brihad Naradiya Purana explains it's the only salvation in this age of Kali. So why are all these problems happening? Because people are not willing to perform this yajna. And the leaders of society They're promoting everything but this yagya, which is the only means that is going to bring real prosperity to this world. Because by chanting the holy name, the hearts become pure. When the hearts become pure, people act piously. When people act piously and perform and come together to congregationally chant the holy name in this spirit, it attracts all the blessings, all the mercy of all the devatas and God Himself. The wealth of wonderful rains come everywhere. It describes in at times when there was pious kings and pious citizens, the rains were not like this. It's not that one season everything was dried up by the sun, and then the next season there were so much torrents of rain that there was just floods and overflowing of sewage and disease and plants being destroyed by excessive rain. Huh? When the rain comes down like that, that is not a result of yajna. That is also a result of sinful activities. But we read that at the time of previous ages, in the time when there was actual piety, nobility, and religiosity amongst men, it wouldn't even rain during the day. It would be very nice, refreshing, cool during the day of the rainy season, and you'd take rest, and at night, nice, beautiful rains would come down. The clouds would just regulate. Because the clouds are being controlled by superior intelligent people, the devatas, Indra. And in this way, the clouds would regulate and just very wonderfully pour down waters just where it was required, just to fill the lakes, to fill the rivers, to nourish the agricultural fields. And then you'd wake up in the morning and everything was green and everything was fresh and the rivers were flowing with pure water and all the wells were filled with beautiful sweet water and everyone would go, Adibo. They'd chant their japa, they'd come for Mangalarti, they'd hear Srimad Bhagavatam, and they would enjoy their life in whatever service they would offer to Krishna. This is civilized life. This is natural life. This is the life of simple living, high thinking. This is the motto of Sanatana Dharma. Simple living, high thinking. Are there any questions?
Maharaj, this doubt used to come into our mind that when we see so much about Krishna consciousness amongst the leader, we say that if the leader is Krishna consciousness, then there will be no problem among the full country as such. But when we see our scriptures also, when Lord Krishna himself was the king of Dwarka, and he would be definitely having Krishna consciousness in his whole Dwarka, then why is it so that his son himself, all the Yadus and all of them, they were completely not following the regulatory principles and died himself by just quarreling each other? That means there was no Krishna consciousness over there. So the same thing when these people argue, these karmi people, they argue that when you are saying about Krishna consciousness, Krishna himself when he was the king, don't you think so that he was following the Krishna consciousness rules and regulations among the countrymen? Then why is it so happened that Yadu himself, who are the children himself, they died because they were drinking each other and they cleaned each other, and they were not at all following. The same thing can happen over here also if the leader becomes Krishna conscious as such. So how to argue that?
But then we all go back to Godhead. That would be wonderful. Dwarka was the perfect place. There was no arguments. There was no shortage of anything. Dwarka was the spiritual world. Everyone was perfectly harmonious with one another. There was no problems in Dwarka. Even the demons, you never find one demon that could enter into Dwarka. Huh? Because Krishna was king. Everything was so prosperous, flourishing. It was the land of love. It was the spiritual world on earth. There was no quarrel. There was no violence. There was nothing but loving exchanges. But at the very end of Krishna's lila, when he wanted to send all the Yadus back to the spiritual world, because he wanted them to go before him, He personally arranged and orchestrated for them to fight amongst each other as a leela, just to go back to Godhead. But that was specifically organized by him. Huh? But up until that point, when he wanted to send them back to Godhead, Dwarka was the kingdom of God. It was the land of love. It was the land of supreme fortune. Up until that point, you never read of anything but love and trust within Dwarka. Huh?
Senses, eating grass, they went away. But we also said that many of them have left the moment. Many of them have left the moment not because they were allured by the senses, but because they didn't find love and trust. The God brothers were more concerned with their own service. So how is it that...
Still they're being allured by the grasses of Maya, no doubt. But why are they being allured by the grasses of Maya? Because they're not finding that sweetness within their own herd of Vaishnavas. We're easily prey to be looking elsewhere, to be allured by all the temptations of Maya, unless we're finding satisfaction and love and trust amongst the Vaishnava community. So anyone who leaves, there's no other reason but they're being allured by Maya. But why are they being allured by Maya? Why, when Krishna's all attractive, why are they being allured by Maya? One is they're committing offenses, and they're Krishna, and therefore Krishna is just completely withholding all of his attraction. So they have nothing else except the alternative to just look for attraction through the allurements of Maya. Such a person, very difficult to come back until that person is punished for offenses. But as far as we are concerned, unless we reveal, the devotees are supposed to reveal Krishna's love to the world. The devotees are supposed to share Krishna's love amongst each other. Unless we perform the austerity, the sacrifice of endeavoring to show Krishna's love to each other, to share Krishna's trust with one another, then people will not be attracted to Krishna. A very advanced devotee is attracted to Krishna. One who is not so advanced, his attraction for Krishna is by his attraction to the devotees of Krishna. Krishna is revealing himself through the devotees. And if you're a devotee and I'm a devotee, it is our duty to allow Krishna to attract each other through our qualities, by surrendering to Krishna's will, by being the servant of the servant of the servant, which is his will. If all of our devotees actually captured this mood of being the servant of the servant of the servant, and when it's always talking about Krishna and always coming together to chant Krishna's name, Krishna would shine through all of us so much that who would ever want to leave to chase after the grasses of material enjoyment? But if we're quarreling amongst each other, and we're having politics amongst each other, and we're criticizing each other, and we have too much, we're too busy doing that than to come together and have wonderful kirtan and Krishna katha and service toward one another, then people will just think, what is all this? This is what Krishna, this is Krishna's attraction, this is Krishna's beauty. The grasses of Maya's temptations seem much more pleasurable than this. There's not so much politics, even in my own home. I might as well just go home. So in this way, we are cheating each other to the degree we are not accepting this principle of servant of the servant of the servant, to the degree we are not making sacrifices to establish love and trust amongst each other. We are cheating each other from the vision of Krishna's love. And then everyone will go looking somewhere else.
said once in the blade of grass.
Hello, Hare Krishna. I said, if you are not soft, then what is the use of I being soft? The one blade of grass, the other. Because ultimately it is meant for Krishna's pleasure.
One blade of grass is encouraging the other blade of grass to be soft by his own example and by his words. But you know if the other isn't, it's going to cause pain to Krishna. Doesn't mean what is the use of me being if he's not, no? We are as soft as we can be. Our hearts should be as soft as they can be. But we know any living entity whose heart is like a hard blade of grass is giving pain to Krishna. So therefore we're willing to give our life to help that person become soft-hearted so that he will give Krishna pleasure. Huh? And how? First of all, you have to be soft. And when that blade of grass next to you sees how much you're giving Krishna pleasure, then he will think, oh, I should also become like that. That is preaching in a very simple explanation. Yes. You have to speak in microphone, Mataji.
How we develop attachment and faith in the Holy Name?
First of all, we must associate with people who have attraction and faith in the Holy Name. Without that association, it is very difficult. Regular association. And we should chant the Holy Name in that association of such persons. And second of all, yayatamam prapadyante, in that association with that inspiration, we must strictly chant the Holy Name according to our Guru's instructions. Your Guru has, you have taken vow to chant 16 rounds every day, to come to Mangal Arati, to sing and chant with the devotees every day. If we follow these principles to our best ability and associate with devotees who are following those principles to the best of their ability, then naturally that attraction will come. But if we're breaking our vows by not chanting nicely, then how do you expect Krishna is going to reciprocate with his name when you're not even following the promise that you've made to his name? The spiritual master is teaching us how to develop a taste for the chanting of the Holy Name. And if we simply follow the spiritual master's instructions with faith and devotion, then that attraction will come. If it's not coming, it means we are not really trying to follow the instruction that is given to us, and we are not seeking shelter of those people who have that faith and taste in chanting Hare Krishna. So these two principles must be accepted in our life. Then the Holy Name comes to life. Then we can actually begin to experience a glimpse of the glory of Krishna's name. Yes?
We can see in the world today that even though India has been a country where the maximum sacrifices have been performed since many, many thousands of years, it is the most theistic country, but one of the most poorest countries, as against the most atheistic countries like Germany, America, Arabia, which even today are demoniac, but they are the most prosperous countries in the whole world. So why is that discrepancy there? When the yajna is not being performed, why are they prosperous?
You see, how long can your past karma keep you going if you're acting sinfully now? Yes, it is a fact. In the past, the great kings and the great rishis of India were performing the greatest yajnas. But it is a fact that India was the most prosperous country in the world even 500 years ago. Every conqueror wanted to conquer India. The Muslims wanted India. The Greeks wanted India. The Europeans wanted India. Everyone wanted India. In fact, the British conquered most of the world, but India was called the crown jewel of the British Empire. India was the most, had the greatest natural resources, the greatest prosperity of any country in the world for ages. But when people gave up their faith in sacrifice, especially in this age, the chanting of God's name, and they started turning to the Western ways, and they started becoming corrupt, and the Brahmins started misleading people and exploiting people. For him, India was depriving itself of its own heritage. And when a child who's well grown up, well educated, and knows better commits abominable activities, the parent is going to punish that child the harshest. A child who knows much less is not expected. If he does something wrong, he'll get a mild slap. The Western countries, they never had much spiritual culture. They performed a lot of pious activities due to certain religious principles, and they're getting good results. Now they're acting sinfully. In the future, they're going to get bad results, but not to the extent of India. Why? Because they don't know so much. India knows everything. The Vedas tell everything. The Rishis tell everything. The heritage of India is the deepest, fullest, richest spiritual culture. But now, in the name of religion, people are just concocting all sorts of forms of demigod worship. Just give me this money, give me this thing, give me that thing. And people are engaged. The population of dacoits and people, westernized people who are eating meat and slaughtering cows, huh? And selling all these permit rooms of alcohol. For an Indian to do this? Huh? Therefore, India is getting a massive slap in the face. And it's going to get worse and worse and worse unless people take shelter of the gifts that God has given them in the form of Vedic culture, spirituality. You could make all policies to try to appease the sufferings of India. But factually, unless the Indians, again, revive their original spiritual culture and live in harmony with God, they're just going to be smashed. There's going to be blows of suffering just inflicted upon this country again and again and again. And there's no alternative. This is the land of God. This is the land of religion. Krishna will not settle for anything but Sarvadharman Puratyaja in this land of India. Huh? Any other questions?